One of the things that, one of the programs that I got started at Derek's son before they killed the research department was a program that dealt with microbiological conversion of oil. And that's one of the things that eventually, that's how they get rid of the oil in the ocean. The microbes are there all the time. So they get something to eat and they develop. The colony develops. And J.N. Pugh told me that back in, when he first was acquainted with the Lake Maracaibo in Venezuela, there was oil floating around every place. And the next time he went down there, there wasn't any oil any place. Well, what happened was the microbes got to working on it, and they developed. They developed a big supply of microbes, and they chewed up the oil and got rid of all that waste oil. And we've developed a very successful process there at Sun of conversion of methane into sugar. You can grow sugar cane a lot cheaper. We had a hell of a good process, but profitability wise it wouldn't stand up.
When you first went to Sun, did you have any ambitions to become president of the company or move up into the company in any way?
I was promised that, in fact, but really after I got in there, I realized that it was hopeless, that there were too many people in the wings that thought they should have that opportunity. So the kind of competition you had there was a deadly kind. In other words, you had the very people that you count on to, because no one individual can do. You've got to surround yourself with people that know more than you do and know how to do it. And they got to have the freedom to do it. Well, if that latter limitation were not in it, well, I probably might have made the job, but and I wasn't young enough. In fact, Bob Dunlop was younger than me by about 7 years.
Thank goodness.
By at least 5 years.
It's because you were...
After all, he was already president. Well, there wasn't any reason that I should, that Bob Dunlop should get rid of him and put me as president. But I didn't use my head. I was let in there by Clarence Thayer, that I had complete confidence in. And Clarence Thayer needed me very bad in that organization to conduct the research for Sun. And then Dunlop put together a conglomerate that was Sunray DX down in Tulsa. And it was absorbed by Sun, and it was a major mistake. But Dunlop put it together, and the man that came in as head of the Sunray DX, he had never had any research that he paid for. Otherwise, he went to UOP or some of those other companies that peddled the research. And Sun always had a powerful research organization. They still don't have anything. That research organization was destroyed. The very organization that created catalytic cracking. Too bad. the nation lost out on that.
Are those the reasons you took your retirement in 1970?
Well, yes, and I was going to be forced to retire in 3 years, and I didn't know what the situation was going to be in 3 years, so I didn't know what it was then. I had contact with General Electric, and they wanted me as a consultant, and there were some others that wanted me. So I did. I said, well, what the hell? I'll get out of this mess, rat race.
Now, you were living in Wallingford all that time?
No, by that time I had moved up to the Eastern Shore. Oh. My wife and I built a place up there. We got into a big fight there. So I met Hilaire DuPont. And that crowd, and it was a B.F. Goodrich Chemical Company, where they were going to build what they said was an innocuous plant on the Chesapeake and Delaware Canal. And that they were going to ship in the monomer and polymerize it there and just ship out the polymer. Well, that sounds very innocuous, but it wasn't quite that. As soon as they had gone in and they had picked up about, I guess, 3,000 or 4,000 acres of land right on the canal, and they were setting it up where they would take lead offs from the canal and into their docks and their would permit a real chemical plant. Well, they were also working on several other processes through an espionage system that I employed while I operated the research there. It's on. I employed an espionage system where I found out what my competitors were working on in the research field. So if I knew what they were doing, I knew damn well that I wasn't going to get caught with my pants in half mast. And I did. They were going to make acrylonitrile there. They were going to go out and buy cheap, very low cost petroleum naphtha and crack it there in the plant, and they were going to make acrylonitrile. Well, you being a chemist, you recognize that word, acrylonitrile, is a disguised word. That's another name for ethylene cyanide, and believe me, it's a cyanide. Acrylonitrile is nothing else but ethylene cyanide. And I remember crucifying that bunch of lawyers from B.F. Goodrich one night at a meeting, the Coast Guard, not the Coast Guard, but the Corps of Engineers put on at Texas, at Elkton. And I got up and I had a group there of men and in the research department that carried out the computations. They knew what the problems were in this kind of a design. One of the problems was that you had a byproduct, 50 pounds a day of it. 50 pounds a day, hydrogen cyanide. Now, what can you do with it? Well, how can you get rid of that hydrogen cyanide? Well, they even thought about pumping it down in the ground. Well, they'd gotten it down into the aquifers and it polluted everybody's wells all over the county. I attended them. My wife, this is one of the things that bless her heart, she got me, there's a picture. She was a very brilliant woman. And she called me, it was right at Christmas time. And she says, I've been over to the courthouse here in Elkton listening to a trial that with regard to this conflict between B.F. Goodrich Chemical Company and the people here in this county. And she said, we're building our home down here, and you're going to have to get into this fight whether you want to or not, because we can't allow this pollution to take place. It's got to. And I was right. So I attended a meeting, well, maybe not that night, but one or two nights later, at Larry DuPont's home there in Chesapeake City. And she has a horse breeding farm there, Woodstock, they call it, Woodstock Farm. And Alaire, she'd go to these meetings I'd go to, and my adrenaline gland was in total reflux, and she'd go there and work needlepoint. I can't understand how the hell she ever did it, but she did it. You wouldn't think that she had a nerve in her body, but I'll tell you, that woman is a vicious fighter. Don't ever get in a position where you're fighting with her, because you'll lose the battle. And I agreed to take on the job of president of the Cecil County Anti-Pollution League. And she had a friend that was on his vacation down in Florida, and by the name of Brian Fields. He was a former writer for the New York Times. And Will DuPont had employed him to come up and help him create Delaware Park, I guess it's called. It's a racetrack. And Alaire recognized that this problem was pretty damn deep. And Brian Fields did too. So he said, well, he said, we can't have anybody but the name DuPont president of this company or this organization, because B.F. Goodrich Chemical Company happens to be the best customer that the DuPont company has. And we can't have anybody that with the DuPont name in the management of it. And so he looked at me and he said, and you're the vice president of Sun, aren't you? And I, yeah. And he said, well, you fit the bill that you could be president of this. And he said, I think that you should be, because you have the knowledge to be effective. So I was talked into being president of it. And because I did have a home over there that was going to become valueless very soon, because the C&D Canal was going to be as polluted as the Houston Ship Canal. And believe me, it's polluted. So I finally ended up as president of it. And, oh boy, we were fighting them on every street corner. And they were bringing the Corps of Engineers into it, and that was, of course, I knew one of the final steps they were going to make. And they would really get the law set up on their side. And they had a pack of lawyers at this meeting, this first meeting that I attended. And we didn't have any more meetings like that after that. I carried on a running battle with them in the press. Newspapers. But I got all the information that I needed. I had all the information that I needed as to what the problems were with building an acrylonitrile plant there on the canal. And so I can recall getting up before this group, and I said, and that bunch of lawyers over there, don't know what they're getting their head into. But acrylonitrile, now that sounds like a very tame material. And I know you make oil on from it, and that I have, the clothes I have on, it's not, these are not good. But they're made of Orlon, and I like the material very well. But let me tell you something, that's acrylonitrile. And acrylonitrile, well now, one of the products that they have as a waste product is something that very bad, it's hydrogen cyanide. But you know what? Acrylonitrile is also a cyanide. They call it acrylonitrile because that's a nice name. They don't call it ethylene cyanide because that has a bad ring to it. Well, I was with those lawyers over there. They didn't know their ass from first base about what I was talking about in chemistry, but these people in the audience knew what cyanide meant. And that's what I knew, and I could see their eyes were sticking on out like crawdad's eyes. And I thought, well, I'll follow this up. And I said, now you're going to have the size plant they want to build over there. They're going to have about 50 pounds a day of hydrogen cyanide. And you know what? Here in the state of Maryland, we have a gas chamber where we put people to death rather than hang them. And it takes 7 grams of hydrogen cyanide to kill a person. Now, let's see, how many grams are there in a pound? And I figured that out for them there. And I said, now we can kill that many people every day, because we're going to have 50 pounds of this every day. I'm telling you. Well, I was walking out the internet, my wife was with me, and there was one of the big wigs in politics here in Cecil County in the vestibule there, and somebody asked him, how are we coming out on this? And he said, we are in for a long time, I can tell you. And he was ready to get out of the fight. Well, thereupon I became very good friends, and she financed the whole deal, and I got acquainted with a lot of people that were very powerful in the state of Maryland. She owned the horse of the year that was for 3 years undefeated, and that was Kelso.
Oh yes, yes.
Now they're owning Kelso, and she, I guess she still does. She's right her fence line. She's a horseback. And she was a. Oh, she talked like an old country gal. Don't you ever put the decimal point there, Bob. You're going to get murdered. She's an old country gal. She's a very sophisticated woman. And she was the first environmentalist that I ever met that was really and truly an environmentalist and wasn't in it for what they could get out of it. She was in there on a defense, and she was going to fight. And she did. And we won. Spiro Agnew was governor then. They finally got rid of him other ways. But Spiro Agnew, I went to talk to the head of the Corps of Engineers, and he let me know in no uncertain terms that, well, if the governor wants this, he says, the Corps is going to be behind it. Well, I knew that beautiful house I was building would be worthless after they got through polluting the grounds around it with some of the byproducts they had. And I go up just see you there every now and then. When I, she's always been very nice to me. I did a favor for her that she will never forget. But she was a worthy woman. She's a good woman. Her husband was killed in the World War II in a glider. In fact, he was the guy that founded the concept of bringing a whole lot of troops into a small area with gliders.
Yes, yes.
And he got killed in that.
After you left,
I never knew him. I knew his son, Tippy DuPont, and I got to know a lot of the DuPont family. A very interesting family, a very smart bunch of people. I haven't met any one of them that I thought was stupid. Every damn one of them are clever. Some are just cleverer than others.
After you left Sun in 1970, you did a number of things as a consultant before you set up Kirkbride Associates.
Yes.
In 79.
Yes, I did.
One of the things that I noticed that I was intrigued by was the fact that you were the executive producer of a motion picture.
Yeah, now my son can probably give you more information on that. He was the power behind that.
Oh, I see.
I lost my shirt tail on that. And I was warned about it. I had a Jewish friend there in Wall Street that was trying to persuade me to go into production of oil. And I said, that's too risky. And he said, man, you think risky? He said, making motion pictures far more risky. Besides, I didn't know a damn thing about it. But I learned.
How did you find your consulting contacts during that period after you left Sun? What were you what were you doing? Who were you consulting with? And
well, pretty soon after I left, I got tied up with a bunch of patent lawyers in New York, and they were representing Mobil in a lawsuit, patent lawsuit, and this lawsuit went on for quite a long time. It was a lawsuit that pertained to a molecular sieve catalyst, and that is a very excellent type of catalyst, and Mobil had the original basic patents on that, and my testimony, later I was told by the vice president of the Grace Chemical Company that got beat up in Hartford, Connecticut, he said, I don't think I ever met him, but he says I did at the time of the lawsuit, but he and I talked for a while, and I told him it was really a pleasure to know him, and he said, well, I can't tell you that it's a pleasure for me to know you, because you cost me my company $200 million. And I said, well, how is that? I don't remember that. And he said, well, I'll refresh your memory. And that was my testimony up in Hartford. Well, Judge Clary, in his final verdict, pointed to that testimony, and the test was very convincing that I had given scientific facts that showed that they were infringing the patents. And, well, it was a very clear case. Then I went out to California, to Los Angeles, where the first lawsuit was Mobile versus Grace Chemical and Texaco, and then the next one was out in Los Angeles, and that was versus Filtral Corporation of California and Texaco.
Somewhat ironic that you are now, after the Hoodrey Mobile affair, now you're on the other side for Mobile. Am I correct?
How's that?
You, with the patent lawyers, you were testifying for Mobile.
Yes, and they won the lawsuit.
But earlier, when you were at Hoodrey, you...
Oh, I was on the other side.
You were on the other side fighting Mobile.
Well, yeah, I did, but you know, when it came to the settlement of the lawsuit, and I paid a $3 million, they paid us $3 million, that was really... There would never have been a lawsuit had I been president of the company, the Hoodrey Process Corporation, at the time. Because I knew enough about the operation that I could sit down and work out a settlement agreement with the people that I had to work it out with eventually. And if I had been given the opportunity at that time, when I was the vice president of the company, they had a general in there, Dave Hausman. And he was a nice guy, and he liked me, but I didn't like his operations. I thought they were terrible. And he had a patent attorney there that enjoyed lawsuits, and he didn't. His negotiations were with Mobile. Hell, they weren't even directed towards settling it. He was directing it towards a patent lawsuit, and he was in his glory. In fact, I had to fire the guy later after it was settled. Which I did. Wasn't a very pleasant task. Because I liked him, personally. Although you can't let your personal likes and dislikes bend you too far.